This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Senate Tax Committee first meeting for the 2009 legislative session, and I would ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Hallstein?
Here.
Senator Howey?
Here.
Senator Gerstad?
Here.
Senator Maher?
Yeah, here.
Senator Merchant?
Here.
Senator Nelson?
Here.
Senator Peterson?
Here.
Senator Frisley?
Frisley?
Here.
Senator Hansen?
Here.
Everyone's here.
Thank you. We have a quorum. This morning's meeting is just a little bit different than most of the rest that we will experience as we go on through the legislative session. We will meet at only until 11 o'clock, and we will hear a report from part of the Department of Revenue. Before we get into that, the one daily or every time we meet will be a reminder that we would appreciate if you got a cell phone to turn it off. And let's see, I should take this opportunity to at least introduce the pages which we have. And there's Mariah Potts, who I did not find out where you're from, but we will before the week is over. And let's see, Tina?
Emily.
Tamara?
Emily.
Okay. See, I don't always hear all that good. And I'm proud of being able to pronounce her last name because I do have some folks in my legislative district with the same name, Mitchell Knaus. And we're happy to have you with us, serving us for these next, four legislative days after today, I guess. With that, I will welcome to the microphone, and I think this is very worthwhile, not only for those of us on the committee, but also for those of you listening out there in the on the internet, to get a little better understanding of what the Department of Revenue does. And let's see, would Secretary Kinsman like to be the one to kind of guide us through the people on your staff that you want to acknowledge, and we will just proceed from there. So welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Paul Kinsman, Secretary of Revenue and Regulation. My purpose here today is to introduce some of the folks that you'll be seeing in front of you with various different bills before the Senate Tax Committee. Understanding that we're a little bit limited in time, I'm going to keep this very short so that Michael can go through the first presentation that will be done by the department from our Property and Special Taxes Division. I'll just briefly give you an introduction of some of the folks that you'll see. Michael Kenyon is the Director of Property and Special Taxes. Many of you who have been around know Michael. Michael's right-hand person with all of the statistics and all of the data that you're going to get with regard to the valuation systems that we'll be discussing is Colleen Skinner. From the Department of Motor Vehicles, you'll also be seeing some bills from them with Deb Hilmer.
Deb.
The Business Tax Division, you will be seeing Jan Talley, the Director of the Business Tax Division, and also Jane Page. She is the liaison for the Streamline Sales Tax Project and knows more about the Streamline Project than probably I or many of the people in the department, and she will be testifying with regard to the Streamline bills and also be giving you a presentation next week on the Streamline Sales Tax Project. Project and what we've done in the past. Lastly, I have Bruce Christensen. He is the director of our audit division. He will be essentially backup when we're at other committees, and he also has extensive knowledge with regard to the department and how it functions and the bills that are going to be coming in. I would offer to the members of the committee all of the Department of Revenue staff are at your disposal to answer questions, help you out with issues, help explain what the impacts are. We are going to be spread rather thin this year with regard to the different committees we're in. We're in transportation. We're in both of the tax committees. We are in both of the commerce committees. Some of those committee times compete with the committee times that we have with the tax committees. And so if we are not available or you don't know where we're at, Kelly Thompson is our legislative liaison. Kelly, I will be sending to each of the members of the committee Kelly's phone number and her email address. Kelly will know where, one, who you need to talk to if you don't know, and two, she will know where they're at, and she will get a message to them if they're over here at the Capitol at another committee, if you're looking for someone or for an answer. If you let Kelly know, Kelly will put you in touch with the person, or she will get them to get in touch with you at your convenience. We appreciate all the efforts that the legislature has made in the past, and hopefully will continue to view the department as a resource. And with that, then I'll go ahead and turn it over to Michael Kenyon so that he can discuss the issues that are arising and going on in the property tax arena.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, and I will try real hard to, as we schedule bills, to, at least within the day that I've got them scheduled, to shuffle them so that it is workable for you and your staff, in case there's a conflict with other committees. So, thank you very much,
Chairman.
I'm sure that we will be seeing more of you as the days progress.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Michael Kenyon, South Dakota Department of Revenue and Regulation. I would agree with that probably a little bit more than you'd like to by the end of this. I'd like to start. We included a handout in your packet that looks like this. The first page of it looks like this. It's a series of maps and charts, and the first page is a cover page, sort of a memo on this issue. If you could dig that out of your packet, I'll be referring to it in a little bit. To start with sort of the big picture, I'm going to see if I can break my this issue up into three different parts for you. I'm going to start with kind of the problems we have with our current valuation system, and then I'm going to move on to how the legislature addressed those problems in the last legislative session, and then finally I'm going to look at the consequences of that legislative fix, the new productivity system valuation that you've hopefully heard a lot about. Just interspersed with those, if it's all right with the chairman, I'm going to stop and take questions at each of those portions so that you don't have to wait till the end if you've got a question. So I'll start with the problems with the current valuation system. Back in the late 1990s, the legislature did what was meant to be a temporary fix with our property tax valuation system. The legislature passed three laws that created rules that threw out otherwise usable sales from our assessment process. Our assessment process relies primarily upon sales to value all types of land in the state, and they said we don't want to use certain sales. They created rules that threw out some of those sales. The collective effect of those rules is a dramatic reduction in the number of usable sales that our counties had to value their land, particularly their ag land. In 1998, we had 1,420 usable ag sales in the state. That's an average of over 21 a county. In 2006, the last years that we had the complete numbers for, we had just 200 usable ag sales. That's an average of about three sales per county. And I'll tell you that it's almost impossible to accurately and fairly value all the ag land in a county with just an average of three sales. You can't do it well. And you can see the problems that this lack of sales has created in our valuation system. If you look at our first set of maps have there's three maps, and they have 2008 equalized dollar per acre total on the front of the first map. What that is the status quo values. the status quo values in the state. These are the last year that we've got the right numbers for. We've broken out the ag value per acre by the total ag value in the county, and then we've broken it into cropland and pasture land. And if you turn to the middle page of that packet, it says 2008 equalized dollar per acre crop. So we're looking at just the crop land in each county. And you can see that there's some very wide discrepancies between counties. If you look at, for example, Hughes County and Sully County, of course we're in Hughes County now, and you can see that there's a difference in the average dollar per acre in cropland of over $245 between those two counties that are right next door to each other. If you look at Day and Roberts County, you'll see that there's over a $330 difference per acre in the valuation between those two counties. So the system has created huge disparities between valuations of similar ag land between counties. If you flip over to the third map in that set, that's the 2008 equalized dollar per acre for non-crop. This is your non-crop land, your pasture land, basically. And you see that there's similar distortions in our non-crop land as well. If you look at Corson County and Perkins County, for example, Corson County is about half what the valuation is in Perkins County. If you look at an eastern example, look at Lake and Moody County. Those counties are right next door to each other. The pasture land in Lake County is $302 an acre, and in Moody County it's $975 an acre. It's triple in Moody County. The value is triple in Moody County what it is in Lake County. So our valuation process has been skewed by this these set of laws that remove sales from the assessment process. We've done the analysis last year, and we're updating it now, but we looked at what would happen to all the value of all the property in the state if all these sales that were excluded from the process were put back in. What we would add is about $14.1 billion of value statewide. That's in all three classes of property. Most of that value, about $12.5 billion of it, is ag land. So we've mostly got an ag land problem with our valuation system. Last year, the legislature looked at a number of different options to address this issue, to fix these discrepancies, to come up with a better valuation system, particularly for the ag land. If you look at the first page of the handout that I gave you a little memo. Now that memo are some bullet points. Those bullet points, I tried to lay out the five sort of main. Before I switch to that, I forgot I was going to stop and pause for questions. Anybody have any questions about the current valuation system and the distortions that it's created in our valuation system?
Senator Howey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Something you said is that the problem I don't remember exactly how you said it, but basically the inequity has to do with the valuation of ag property. I just want to make certain that as we move forward that we don't move forward under what I think would be an incorrect assumption that all ag property is undervalued. The issue that we have to deal with, I think, and please correct me if I'm way off track, is that the sale of property within ag communities, perhaps for other purposes, has created, you could almost call it an inflated value, which that creates an inequity. And so if we taxed ag properties at those inflated values, we'd be chasing people off the farm and the ranch in droves. Is that accurate, would you say?
Mr. Chairman, I think that is accurate. I think that's the original motivation for some of these laws that were meant to weed out the sales of ag land. There are ag land sales. It was a field when you bought it. It would be a field after you buy it. But the presumption was that because of the price that you paid for it is that you're not going to be using that for agricultural land. You know, it's going to be a Walmart, it's going to be a subdivision, something like that in the future. And that was the original intent to remove some of those sales from the process, and I think that was the intent. However, the fact is that those rules that we created were are throwing out all the sales. So they're not just getting the ones that are that were sort of the intent to prevent the sales of agricultural land for property that's going to be developed from impacting everyone else's the true ag guys' valuations. Those rules have sort of swallowed up everything, and there's not very many sales left.
Okay, go ahead and proceed.
Well, then going on to sort of the second step in this process is to look at what the legislature did last year. If you look at the five bullet points I've got on this memo, I try to lay out the key components of this new system. That is, the first point is that sales are no longer going to be used to value agricultural land. We're going to try to value agricultural land based upon its productivity. And so for cropland, we're looking at using countywide average yields and then statewide data for crop values. So we'll look at individual counties as for example, how much corn the average acre in the county is yielding. And then we'll look at prices, commodity prices, to figure out a revenue source for the per acre. And then for pasture land, we're doing a similar thing, except we're looking at cash rents. We're looking at using cash rents to value the pasture land. We wanted sort of a long-term stable system. So we did. We're looking at an 8-year Olympic average of the data. So we go back 8 years, and we throw out the high, and we throw out the low, and we keep the six in the middle. And that provides a stable system that won't have big increases or decreases from year to year. One of the main points that the legislature stressed when they transitioned to this system is they didn't want a big increase or a big decrease in the amount of statewide agricultural value. They also wanted to minimize any shifts from cropland to pasture land. So those were two of the goals that they had. And those goals were met with the oversight committee that met this summer. We have about $18.5 billion of agricultural land in the state right now with our current market system. And about 85% of that value is cropland, and about 15% of it is pasture land. And under this new productivity system, we're keeping exactly that same framework. We'll have $18.5 billion of agricultural land, and about 85% of it will be crop, and 15% of it will be pasture. So there's no shift between classes of property within the state. The agricultural property owners will still collectively be paying their same share, and there won't be a shift between the crop and the pasture property owners. If you look at the basic formula that the legislature came up with, it's you take the gross revenue, and again, that's either commodity prices and yields for cropland, or it's cash rents for pasture land. You take that times a landlord share percentage, and then you divide it by a capitalization rate. The landlord share percentage for cropland is 35%. The landlord share percentage for pasture land is 100%. So we use 100% of the cash rent in revenue, and we use 35% of the crop revenue. And then we divide it by a capitalization rate, and that capitalization rate is 6.6%. And again, if you and you can see I included in the bullet point an example of how that formula would work with a crop revenue of $100 per acre. But again, using those numbers in the formula, we have a statewide no shift up or down in agricultural value, and no shift between cropland and pastureland. And this formula, again, will be the starting point for the agricultural valuation system. The local director of equalization, the local assessor, will still be required to go in and make adjustments based upon topography, rocks, different climatical situations. So it'll be the starting point that the assessor uses to determine the valuation. And I should have, when I was putting this together and thinking about this morning, I should have added a sixth bullet point, a very important point that I left out, and that is that the legislature also, as I talked earlier, we have big shifts in our big discrepancies in our valuation system now, and as we're moving to this productivity system, those fixes are going to be cured, and that's going to require some counties to go up in ag value and some counties to go down in ag value. What the legislature intended to do last year, they included in a bill a restriction that the values could not go up more than 15% a year. And there'll be the Oversight Committee worked on a bill and will present a bill this year to ensure that neither the increase nor the decrease will be above a certain percent. So we'll be phasing into this new system as we go along. And I think that would be a good point to stop if anyone have questions.
Senator Maher.
When you were looking at the cash rents for pasture land, do they consider any? Are they using AUMs? Is that what it's going to be based off when you say cash rents? Or,
Mr. Chairman, we originally, and the bill originally contained AUM, an AUM requirement, and that was our original intent. We worked very carefully with South Dakota State University, their Ag Economics Department, and we tried a number of methods to get the AUMs to work, but the numbers didn't work out. What we had is almost no differential between the East River pasture land and the West River pasture land. It was about the same value, and we said, well, that can't be right. So we looked at a number of different options, and we finally went back to cash rents. The year before this last sort of summer study or oversight committee, we had a presentation and we looked at the systems from the productivity valuation systems from a number of states. And one of the states we looked very closely at was Kansas. And Kansas also has the same type of system. They use cash rents for their pasture lands, and then they use sort of a more traditional productivity valuation system for their cropland.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Fersley.
On one bullet point here, you're talking about countywide averages. In visiting with our county assessor, he indicated that the production or the proven yields of the FSA are not being used. I was wondering, is that a correct statement? And if it is, why are they not using the proven yields from the FSA?
Mr. Chairman, the South Dakota State University looked at a number of different data sources to arrive at the both the commodity prices and the cash rent information and the yields from each county, and what they decided to use was the NAS data. The NAS data it's been around forever. It's widely considered to be accurate. It's and it's readily available in the format that they needed it, because they needed to be able to download 8 years worth of data on each crop in each county, so it was important to have a data source that was accessible. So that was the data source that they chose.
Senator Gerstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. King. This is kind of an ignorance question here. What about all the land in our state? Say there's large acres that are owned by people from outside the state, and it could be used as farmland, but it's not. What happens under those situations? Is that a very low tax situation, I'm assuming?
Mr. Chairman, the fact that property is owned by an in-state or an out-of-state person doesn't have any impact on how it's valued. If somebody owns land to be classified as agricultural land, it has to meet two out of three tests. There's a minimum size requirement of the parcel, and that's set there's a minimum state threshold, and then the county can increase that up to 160 acres. And then there's a requirement that it grow what we refer to in the department as food, forage, or fiber. You need to grow something, or be in the agricultural business. And then the final thing is that there's a revenue test, a revenue component. If you get, I think it's, is it 30%? If you get 1/3 of your revenue, of your income from agricultural pursuits, then you meet that component of the test. So if you meet two of the three tests, then you're classified as agricultural land, and that doesn't change under this productivity system. The classification system is the same. It's just how you're valued once you're considered ag would change under the system.
Senator Adelstein, then Senator Peterson.
Yes, sir. The $12 billion increase, that had to do, did you say, with the valuation based on sales of the property? And now changing to the productivity or rental, what would that change be in comparison to the $12
billion? Mr. Chairman, that's an excellent question. The $12.5 billion of value that we would have if we used all the sales and valued everyone accordingly, that is not included in this valuation system. That value is, we went with the status quo. The legislature went with the status quo. So that $12.5 billion is not going to be included in this system.
Chairman, if I can, I need to clarify my question. If it isn't used, but this new valuation method is used, how much of an increase will there be to compare to the $12
billion? Mr. Chairman, there won't be an increase. It'll be a... We're going from the we decided the legislature decided to make the new system to establish the values in the new system be the same as the status quo values. So none of that $12.5 billion of ag value will be recaptured and put into the new system.
Chairman, I guess in other words, the new system, you say status quo, the new system will end up with the net same amount of value in the whole state?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. We started out with $18.5 billion of agricultural value. This system will produce about $18.5 billion of agricultural value.
Is that by coincidence or is this by law?
Mr. Chairman, it was exactly by design. The legislature chose to produce a system, to produce a statewide valuation that would be the same as the status quo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, and if I may expand on that just a little bit, the philosophy was that at this time, this little window, we have a time when probably no one wants to pay more tax, but I think it's in pretty well agreement that commercial property is basically being treated as fairly as can be relative to residential property, relative to agricultural property. But as we go forward, without some real structured direction to county directors, they don't have any direction right now in how you arrive at a figure to base property taxes on ag land. They do have some pretty good structure for residential and commercial, but that's not the case in ag property. What this does is designed to implement something that has a reasonably logical basis going from one county to another and to achieve fairness. And as we go forward, you know that there will be increase in valuations in ag property as well as increasing in residential and commercial. Part of the difference, though, is that ag property there's no new ag property being created, where, commercial and residential, there are new homes being built and new buildings being built. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to point out to those of you that are involved with ag, when you look at some of the figures that were used here, some of the percentages, like we used 35%. I served on that oversight committee, and what we were trying to do, as Senator Hansen said, was to keep things revenue neutral between classifications of property, between East River and West River, between tillable and non-tillable. So when we did this switch, You know, and this switch is, we're not reinventing the wheel. 43 other states have already gone to some form of productivity. But we used 35%, and a lot of you that are involved with ag might, if you were a landlord, think, boy, I'd like to have 35% clear. That's a pretty high figure. It's actually only probably about 25%. But we were trying to, we had to come up with figures that would keep the total valuations the same. And that's why we came up with the 35% and the 6 3/5. That's not saying that they will stay at that. We'll look at those every year. And ag valuations have gone up, like this $18.5 billion that we have now in total ag at this transition period. When we started this process a few years ago, that was a few billion less than what that was. So these valuations are going up. But the big problem that we faced for years and years and years was this 150% rule. We wanted to, the governor wanted to get rid of the 150% rule. A lot of the legislators did. And how do we go about this and not cause a big impact, a big tax shift when we do it? And this was the best plan that we thought. So thank you.
Mr. Howley.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just for the sake of clarification, because I think there's some generally there tends to be some misunderstanding about what was really the intent of what was being done, and when we changed the way we assess or value ag properties. In the spirit of fairness, commercial properties are taxed based on their income. Now, you get there because the value that something sells for is based on its income on commercial property. That wasn't the case in ag properties across the board. And so to say all of a sudden, well, we're going to take commercial property based on its value or sales value, and then we're going to judge ag based on its sales value, created an inequity. Because those sales many times in the middle of an ag community were not based on anything that had to do with the ability to produce income. That would be different if it were commercial property. So the very premise of this whole thing was in the spirit of equity and fairness. And so I'm just concerned when we start talking about this, what, $12 billion worth of lost assessed value. Let's keep that in perspective, because it's really not lost. It never was. So there, that's my question.
That's a very good question, sir. Chair would ask one question. Clarify for us, if you would, the requirement that was adopted a few years ago that all property had to be taxed on the basis of a value of at least 85% of true value. The figures that we have here, am I correct that they represent what would be the 85% figure?
Mr. Chairman, that's right. The maps that will show the 85%, the equalized value, the market value of 100% equalized down to 85%. That's true. And the example that I gave you in the bullet point, the formula produced 100% value, and then the taxable value would be 85% of that. So, Mr. Chairman,
no further question. Senator Adelstein?
If I may, Senator, I was following everything just now until all of a sudden I heard from Senator Peterson that what's the 35% number? I see the 6.76 cap rate, but what's the
Mr. Chairman, the 35% is the landlord share percentage for crop. That's the percentage of the revenue derived from yields and commodity prices that's used, that's capitalized to determine the value. So we capitalize 35% of the crop revenue to determine the value of the
35% of the revenue is capped at
6.6%.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How is that number arrived at,
Mr. Chairman? those numbers were arrived at to reach the goal that the legislature set for us. They wanted the same amount of statewide ag value and no shift between crop and pasture land. So the numbers were essentially...
Am I doing something right? That was an answer that then was used to create the question. Is...
Hey, Senator, if I can expand a little bit on that, just to go back in history a little bit, for those of you new on the committee, the concept that was developed, which I think would have been by far the simplest way of arriving at value, was to have used the rental market for property, of which there is a very well defined and established rental market. You have a piece of property that you want to rent, and you kind of find out what people are willing to pay for it. They won't go beyond it, and you don't want to charge less than what people are willing to pay. But there was some resistance to that on the part of some of the legislators, and feeling that they just did not have the degree of confidence in using cash rent figures on farmland, even to the degree that they have the confidence in, there's a higher level of confidence in using cash rent figures on grazing land. Okay, the next alternative, here talking in terms of the ownership of the land, that's the return to ownership. You know, the owner has his investment in the land, and what he receives in rent is his return. Equal to cash rent rental relationships are crop share. And traditionally, the portion of the gross crop production going to the ownership, to the person that owns the land, has been about a third. So that's where the 35% comes from. So there's really good, there's as good a basis for using gross at 35% as there is using just cash.
Mr. Chairman, I think if there's no further questions, I'll go on to how this productivity system has addressed some of the inequities that I talked about when I first started talking. If you take our next set of maps, these are the productivity maps. It says the top one says productivity equalized dollar per acre total. These are, again, three maps, and we set them up exactly the same as the first set of maps that we looked at. If you flip again to the center map, the crop map, let's take a look again at what the counties that we highlighted before. Sully County and Hughes County used to have a $245 difference between their cropland values, and you can see that it's now about $67 or so, $64. So we went from 245 to about 60. If you look at the Day Roberts County example before, we were at about $338 difference between those two counties, and you see now that it's 70-something. If you flip over to our pasture land, the last set of the last page on this set of maps, you'll see, you know, we looked at Corson County and Perkins County before, and there was almost double. Corson was about half of what Perkins County was, and now there's $13 difference between their values. If you go to the Lake and Moody County example I used, I remember Lake was a third of what the value was in Moody County, and now there's $8 difference between the two counties. So what we've got is a system that looks, at least on paper and in a map, a lot more rational than the status quo. We don't have the distortions. We don't have the big discrepancies between the counties. It looks a lot more rational. Again, with the counties going up and the counties going down, everyone arrives at the same amount of agricultural value as we've got now. The amount the counties going down equal the counties going up, and we've got the same amount, the same $18.5 billion of ag value that we have now, just distributed in a different way. I know some people are interested in the amount that each county goes down and each county goes up, and that's why we included the last page of in your packet. What this is a nice, convenient tool, so you can look at the ag value in each county, and we've broken out between the total ag value, and then we've broken out the crop and the non-crop or the pasture land, and you can see how much it's going up or going down, what percentage is going up and down. So, for example, in Aurora County, the current total ag, if you include both crop and pasture together, is $559.55 an acre, and under productivity, the current 2008, the current status quo value is $690.66. The productivity value would drop it to $559.55. That's a decrease of 18.98%. And you can see we do that the same thing for the crop. We break out the crop and we break out the pasture. And so with this one chart, you can see at a glance which counties are going up and how much they're going up and which counties are going down and how much they're going down. Again, the legislation that was passed last year limited increases to 15% or more, or 15% or less. The legislation that you'll be considering this year modifies that at the direction of the Oversight Committee so that both the increases and the decreases will be capped. I think the language in the statute in the bill that was the original bill says 15%. So the current bill limits the increases or the decreases to 15%. So you'll see, for example, if you took a county that has a large change in the value, take Clark County, for example. Clark County, their total ag valuation would change 43%. Their cropland would increase 36%, and their pasture land would increase 90%. What the language in the bill that you'll consider this year, I don't remember whether it's SB3 or SB4, what that will do is cap the increase in the cropland to 15% and cap the increase to the pasture land at 15%. And exactly the same thing happens in the counties that are going down. If you look at a Gregory County, for example, that shows a decrease in their crop value of 35%, a decrease in their pasture value or non-crop of 22%. And again, those decreases would be limited to 15% a year. So it'll phase into that, will phase into that, the new valuations from this new system.
Senator Epstein.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. This is my last question because I earn my living, by the way, from renting property in five states, so it'd be commercial and housing. So it's pretty interesting. What happens when this is a total ignorance of agriculture? Without Jim Lintz here, I don't even know how to vote half the time. What happens if, as I understand it, the crop prices vary widely from year to year? In other words, I think I was told that one time corn sold for $4 a bushel and you got so many bushels per acre. Now it went up to $7, and then with the rain and stuff, there was more corn and it went back down. What do you use to cap it at? How do you do that, please?
Mr. Chairman, the legislature considered that point carefully, and they did not want big increases or big decreases in their ag value from year to year. So the method that they chose to address that was to look at not just the last year's worth of values or even the last couple of years' worth of values. They're looking at an 8-year Olympic average of those value of those the commodity prices and the yields. And then with Olympic averaging, you throw out the high, you throw out the low, and you keep the six in the middle. So what you'll find is that in other states use similar systems, what you'll find is a gradual increase or a gradual decrease as the commodity prices and the yields change.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I want to tell you a little story about directors of equalization. It's something that Michael won't do. When we look at the land values and you look at the mess that we had before, some of you will probably wonder why some of the counties were quite high compared to a county that was next to them. I own land in Dual County and I own land in Grant County. And for 4 years in a row until this last year, my land in Grant County never increased in value.
my land in Doolittle County went up 50% over that same period of time. This is contiguous land. Under the old system, the directors of equalization, the county commissioners, had a tremendous amount of power. Some of them just used the 150% rule as an excuse not to try to keep their land values in tune with the times, where other directors of equalization reached out and did bridging and increased the values, and those are the counties that you see very little difference right now under the old system and the new system. If you look at Brookings County, you look at Doolittle County, you'll see there's very, very little change. And some of the counties that were way behind under the old system because they didn't do their increases, you see large increases that occur. I met with the county commissioners in my district, and I have one of the counties, Grant County, that is going to get a 29% increase, a 30% increase. And the county commissioners weren't very happy about that. And I said, well, look at the alternative. I had the Ag Statistics book with me, and that's what you want to look at. And you want to look at what the current land sales are. The current land sales for cropland in Grant County were $2,200 an acre. So are you going to be happy with your $900 an acre, or would you rather have the $2,200 an acre if we completely do away with the 150% rule and don't put in productivity? When you look at choices like that, then you can see that productivity would really is the method not to have a total tax revolt. And the fairest method that we thought that we could switch over and do away with the 150% rule. But under the old system, there was a lot of difference in how directors of equalization were applying the existing laws. And the revenue department really didn't, we didn't give them the teeth to go after and make sure that they were enforcing the rules that we were passing. So I just wanted to explain that a little bit because I know Michael is
more kind than I am.
Further questions? If not,
Mr. Chairman, that's all I've got. I've given you kind of a history of the ag valuation problem we've got and some of the specific as the problems that it's created. Try to walk you through the productivity valuation system and then how it'll impact individual property owners and individual counties. I am certainly going to be around. If you have questions that you think of later as you're mulling through this information, certainly grab me. You can shoot me an email. We'll sit down and talk. I can go over this information with you again. But we'll be around and feel free to hit us up with any questions you've got.
Very good.
I really thank you. This is, I think, a key area that, we've been trying to get to this point for longer than what I've been in the legislature, and I think that we finally have things to the point of where I believe that there's a pretty good measure of agreement on the part of everybody, not that everybody is equally happy, but as Senator Peterson has just said, this brings us to a point of where there really is some structure available to the county directors. With that, Secretary Kinsman, would you like to come back and wind things up? We're doing a very fine job of staying with our projected schedule, and welcome again, Secretary Kinsman.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in my introductions, I did miss one individual that will be before you, particularly on one bill. Our chief legal counsel for the Department of Revenue is Andy Fergal, and he will also be testifying in front of you. Annie, we're here to try and help provide solutions so that you can make the decisions that you need to do. We are here to be a resource for you to make sure that you're comfortable with the votes that you're taking, and we will work very hard this session to make sure that we fulfill that responsibility, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. And the plan is that at our next meeting, our committee is a Monday, Wednesday, Friday committee. But most weeks there will only be either a Wednesday, Friday, or a Monday, Wednesday. Next week we will have our first meeting on Wednesday. And at that time, we'll devote the first hour of the meeting again to hearing reports of the activities of the other parts of the Department of Revenue, of which sales, use, contractors, excise tax, which actually funds state government. As you know, we talk about property tax. State government doesn't get a penny worth of revenue out of the property tax. So now we're getting into the meat of what the governor is kind of directing us to. That will be the first hour, and then we will actually hear testimony on hopefully on three bills, the balance of that meeting hearing, so we should be able to get some of our work out of the way before we get into the really heavy heavy duty. With that, I believe a motion to adjourn would be in order, unless you'd like to stay. That really brought a response. We have a motion from Senator Peterson and a second by Senator Frisley to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We'll see you on Wednesday.